This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there and welcome to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This is episode 41, What Are the Ways That Nursing Homes Attempt to Cover Up Abuse or Neglect? My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
We are Georgia Nursing Home Abuse and Neglect Attorneys, and we are your co-hosts of this episode. Lots of useful information contained in episode 41. We're going to be talking about some ways in which, if you have a loved one in a nursing home or assisted living facility, and you're scratching your head, you're suspecting neglect or abuse in one way or another. Maybe your loved one's losing a lot of weight in a relatively short period of time. Maybe they have unexplained scratches or abrasions or bruises that you can't figure out why. Maybe there's a bed sore. There are a couple ways that a nursing home is going to attempt to keep important information from you.
Yeah, and actually, I want to just kind of tweak a little bit the words that we're using. There are ways in which they may attempt, and there are ways in which it is covered up, perhaps not intentionally. But I guess we can jump right into it.
Yeah.
So... and this comes from, you know, as I've said time and time again, and I like to point out, I worked in a nursing home, many different nursing homes all across the state of Georgia, and hospitals as well. As a CNA, my dad did for, you know, almost 30 years, and my brother did, and now he works, you know, in a hospital. And so I would pretty much break it down into two categories. Ways in which nursing home abuse and neglect, especially neglect, may be covered up. One is intentional and one is unintentional. And when it comes to intentional, there are two different players here. So there are the individual staff members, the CNAs, the LPNs, who are usually the floor nurses, or sometimes RNs, who are the floor nurses. They're the ones passing out the medicines, doing wound care treatment a lot of times, doing basic bandage care and treatment. Then there's the facility itself, which can include the director of nursing and the administrator. So on the low level, on the people in the trenches, the CNAs and the LPNs, quite simply, they may make a mistake and drop somebody, forget to put a bed rail up, forget to change somebody, or even in cases of intentional abuse, you know, they may be the one that strikes the resident, and then they don't pass that up the chain of command, right? So they may, and quite simply put, they may just lie about what happened. You know, they may forget to put a bed rail up and a resident falls out of bed, and then they see this, they pick the resident up, put him back into bed, put the bed rail up, and then say, you know, hey, I don't know what happened. I'm at a loss. And so then, you know, the facility can do an investigation and they're just like, well, we have no idea what happened. Another way that the staff can intentionally cover things up is through documentation. So everyone who is involved in the healthcare team and treating and helping the resident is involved in documentation of the resident. So whether it's the input of liquids and measuring the output of urine, measuring how many times the resident has had a bowel movement, if lower level staff like the CNAs or the LPNs forget to do this, and that leads to a situation that harms the resident, for example, residents who haven't had bowel movements within 72 hours or 3 days have some sort of medical interceding, because that is not healthy, and it's a possible sign of an impaction. So imagine that the CNAs haven't been keeping track of the bowel movement, and then at some point the doctor or a higher up nurse discovers, hey, this person is getting sick, and we think that they have an impaction. The CNAs may literally go back and then write in the documentation and you know, change the documentation of this person's medical records. It happens. And it happens, unfortunately, many times, because that's all that they need to do. On a bigger facility-wide picture, it's really the same kind of thing, but it's the director of nursing or the administrator dictating that they take these actions. Like, hey, I want you to go through and make sure that bowel movements are, you know, are put in place in these documentations. I want you to go through and make sure that all these charts have been backfilled. Or I want you to go through and hide evidence. Like, it's, you got to understand that these people are worried about getting in trouble. They're worried about getting sued. And so it's not really anything for them. They have access to all the records. Nobody is really going to know that it happened, and they can go back through and change medical records. And that's why the more that we move to systems that are computerized, the better. Computerized systems, you know, can time out the ability of people to change records. And when records are changed at a later date, it notes that it's a later date. Unfortunately, the vast majority of nursing homes that I've worked at least 15 years ago, you had a three-ring binder with paper in it, and you would go through and you would write in it. And I have seen many times CNAs and nurses go through and backtrack and write things in. And the facility, you know, again, the facility can either be involved in that or not involved in it. Now, as far as unintentional cover-ups, it's still covering up the negligence that occurred, but it may not be specifically to prevent people from finding that out. And the biggest one is charting by exception. We'll have to have my brother Clay Smith on here sometime to talk about this type of behavior.
Clay's
an RN. But charting by exception is where they simply go through the medical records and they put the same thing down every time, unless there is a major change in the person's medical condition. And so, you know, there could be negligence going on in the sense that this person's being malnourished, or is not getting enough liquids. But because people aren't paying attention, they're just putting the same thing through every time, so that when you go through and you look at the medical records, it reads as though they've been getting liquids and they've been having a normal output, but they haven't. Although it's not intentional, because they're just being lazy about it. But so that's basically the ways in which they cover it up.
Yeah, we're in the process of litigating a particular case in which the nursing home records every 2 hours indicate that comfort measures or repositioning was provided, but it never indicates what comfort measures were provided, which could be fluff a pillow or it could be reposition the body. And so we're having a spectacular fight about that with the nursing home with regard to having to depose and speak to everybody that handled or cared for our client about, okay, well, it says here at 2 p.m., 4 p.m., 6 p.m., 8 p.m., you know, comfort measures provided. What does that mean? Were you charting by exception? Was this, did something actually, did, was there even anybody in there? Or is this, you're just hitting the button to do this over and over again? What's the deal with that? Sometimes the only thing you can do is you got to sit these people down one RN at a time and get them under oath saying, you know what, I don't recall, or, you know, this is an instance in which I just hit the button.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd be surprised at how quickly people will tell on themselves. If they're in a deposition and it's being videotaped and there's a stenographer there and a bunch of attorneys in suits and somebody says, so, you know, be honest with me. Have you ever documented something that you didn't actually do? I can imagine being a 24-year-old CNA, I would have probably not been able to hold it together. So,
Okay. Segueing out to Des Moines, Iowa, for our next story we want to talk about. This is actually quite sad, and we always talk about the possibility of there being a guy with an evil guy with a mustache that he's twirling in the background somewhere. I think that this might be a result of that. But this is due to budget cuts. The Iowa Long-Term Care Ombudsman has eliminated the agency's second largest expense outside of salaries, and that is in-state travel to Iowa nursing homes, which costs $65,000 to $85,000 annually. The Long-Term Care Ombudsman staff visit residents of nursing homes and assisted living centers to investigate complaints of abuse and neglect and provide training for care facility workers. In-person visits, the budget has now been eliminated, allows staff, the ombudsman staff, to address complaints directly. However, for now, the ombudsman can only rely on telephones and technology to address future reports, or they can be, which I envision the ombudsman in Iowa now are going to be like teachers, where they're going to pay out of pocket the gas and travel and lodging to go visit these places. Because I think that if you're an ombudsman, you're a special breed of a nice, you're like,
you're
a teacher.
Doing it for a reason.
You're doing it for a reason.
Yeah. You're not in it for the money.
So Iowa is going through some terrible budget issues with regard to the Department of Aging and the long-term care ombudsman. So here it looks like with the Department of Aging, which employs 8 regional ombudsmen, their budget went from $1.3 million from state and $400,000 from the federal, and was cut to total $500,000. So the Department of Aging got drilled. And then with regard to the Department of Long-Term Care Ombudsmans, 82% of the Iowa ombudsman's budget consumed by salaries. They eliminated the second largest expense, which was the $85,000 for travel. The Long-Term Care Ombudsman in Iowa, let's see, made 700 visits to nursing homes in the 2015-2016 fiscal year that were in direct response to specific complaints of poor resident care and violation of residents' rights. Regional ombudsmen also participated in 99 health and safety inspections of care facilities, which are conducted by the Iowa Department of Inspections and Appeals. There are roughly 53,000 Iowans living in 850 nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And now you're talking about, I think, taking away the teeth of the ombudsman program in Iowa by making it impossible for them to actually conduct on-site investigations.
Yeah, it's a real shame. The article was stating there's about 53,000 Iowans in 805 different facilities, 850 different facilities. It's just we got to get out there and mobilize the elder vote, because they are constantly being neglected in different states.
There's so much importance in the actual on-site investigations.
Oh, absolutely.
If you've ever had the chance to read any reports by the ombudsman, reports by the Department of Community Health, anytime where somebody goes out to investigate, you might be investigating a fall. You might be investigating an issue of dehydration. You might be investigating an issue of the food is cold. And then once you're there and you lay eyes on the facility, you could see that, okay, this fire extinguisher is from 1979. That is putting people in a certain level of danger, the entire residence in danger. You could see that the doors aren't set with alarms. There are other issues that you would only know if you set foot on the facility and not just interview the staff on the phone. There's a certain smell test that you can conduct as an ombudsman when you go to the facility. And I feel like there's less worry on the part of the nursing home if the ombudsman is 30 miles, 40, 50, 100 miles away, and you never have to worry about that person setting foot on your property.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because you can walk into a nursing home. We were one in Oakhurst. You walk into it, and you immediately can tell yourself, there's negligence going on here. Yeah,
something's, you can smell it in the air.
Yeah, this is not a good nursing home.
Yeah. So, ombudsmen do the Lord's work. And it's a shame that Iowa is having trouble budgeting that. And, the laws are made by people, and the people have interests. And the legislature of Iowa, the state legislature of Iowa, there's a reason why this is getting cut as opposed to something else. And the nursing home industry is a strong lobby.
Yeah,
and
this is where I was special interest.
Yeah, and this is where I was saying about the twirly mustache.
Yeah.
I think that there's something amiss with that much of a budget being slashed.
Because in consideration of what we could, they're sitting around, they're going, well, what can we cut here? There is pressure from the industry, and they've got lobbyists that are saying, hey, Jim, hey, Todd, hey, Susie. I assume, Iowa state lawmakers.
Becky Sue.
Yeah. Hey, listen, guys, here's something you could do. This will solve your problems. Let's stop having ombudsmen travel all the way out to these nursing homes. Let's do that instead of cutting, subsidizing deep fried Twinkies at the state fair, which is something they could do. And I assume those are subsidized.
I like deep fried Twinkies.
I've never had one.
I was somewhere in South Georgia at a fair that celebrates pigs. It's some kind of yearly pig thing. Okay. And they had deep fried everything. It was like deep fried Twinkies, deep fried Oreos, deep fried what do you call it? Like they deep fry anything.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. I never had that. That was actually the first time I ever had a funnel cake.
Oh,
and now I eat funnel cake, like, what I'm saying?
Helen's.
For breakfast.
Has a lot of funnel cake.
Helen, Georgia.
Helen, Georgia is where I'm from. Yeah. Saw Tina Cucci, actually.
So anyway, that's, we hope for the best for Iowa. We hope they get their things together. So Will, can you take us to the next story coming at us out of Tucson. How do you say that? Tucson, Arizona. How do I say it?
Like you just had a stroke. Tucson, Arizona.
I don't know.
Out of Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It's Tucson. I don't know what I was thinking. Well, would you imagine that Tucson is spelled with the C?
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. Just like
that might be the first time that I recall ever seeing the word Tucson written.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe, anyway. Is that like Navajo? Like, what is that?
I mean, how do you spell thoughtful?
I don't know where you're going with that. Are you trying to say that I'm not thoughtful?
No. I'm saying that just because you have letters in words doesn't mean they should be there.
I mean, I get that. I'm just saying like that.
Where's the G in thoughtful?
I see. That's okay. It took a long time to get there, but we got it. So what's going on in Tucson?
So here we've got Brianna Burdow of Tucson, Arizona. She's charged with two felonies after state investigators said that she assaulted two elderly residents at the villas at Houghton Senior Care Home. According to the reports, Burdow is accused of causing physical injury or abuse to an 84-year-old villa resident and the assault of another resident who was 94 years old. The CEO of the senior home responded to news reports of the incident in an email and says, you know, that, you know, look, it, we care for 90 residents. We do this 24/7. We, it takes a while to get statements from all of our employees and all of our residents. And that's why it took us a little while for us to report this abuse. And she gives this really veiled threat at the end. And that is, you know, she says, look, we received fingerprint clearance from the state before somebody works for them. And so from our part, you know, once we get that clearance, if there's nothing in there, we hire that person if they meet all the other qualifications. And then she gives this really veiled threat that says, I can't control what you report. I can respond if you report anything other than proven facts, and if any implications are made of wrongdoing on our part that are not proven facts, including whether or not something was done in a timely manner. And we will legally pursue anyone reporting or repeating any false statements or intended implications.
I would read that in closing argument. And that, that's what
well, be, you know, like, here's the thing. And you got to remember that if the nursing home has done everything they can, if they got fingerprint clearance and they don't have any proof that this person has committed abuse in the past, I mean, there's a limit to what they can do. You know, I mean, they can't spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars hiring private investigators to look into every aspect of their employees. I mean, at some point, you know, they've done what they should do. And if an employee decides, you know, that they're going to do something unlawful, it's not really the nursing home's fault at that point.
I agree with that, but I'm not
taking up for the nursing home.
I just don't like the wording where you're threatening the reporter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that seems really passive aggressive.
And just to let you know, Will, as well as the viewers know, that Tucson is from the Spanish name of the city Tucson, and it's derived from Odum, which I guess is a Native American tribe, Kuksan, meaning at the base of the Black Hill, a reference to a basalt-covered hill now known as Sentinel Peak, also known as A Mountain. Tucson is sometimes referred to as the Old Pueblo. So if you really want to get down to it, I was pronouncing it correctly from the original Spanish derived from the actual native name for it. All right, and so that takes care of the etymology, right?
Etymology
of Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson. You know, this is going to be look. If you don't like to listen to this podcast and you don't like to watch it and you prefer to read the transcript of the podcast, the transcript of the podcast is always available at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And Will and I do not do the transcriptions. We actually, Gene, our producer, hires... Gene? Who is it? It's a guy named Dennis. A guy named Dennis is hired to listen to me and Will on this podcast and write the things that were down into a transcript. And he's going to have a good time on this one trying to get Tucson right, trying to get how to spell Oldham. Just remember, I'm talking directly to you, guy, that Dennis, the person that transcribes this episode, that you can go to the Wikipedia page for Tucson, Arizona, and get the correct spelling for all of what we've been saying. That's the first time I don't think I've ever directed anything to the person that transcribes the episode.
This is to you, Dennis.
Okay. Anyway, our next story is out of where are we coming from? We're calling from West Duluth, Minnesota. Fly high, Duluth. So Lawsuit settled against nursing home after they allowed woman to disappear and die. So this is a tragic case of elopement here. Mark Girard received justice for his 74-year-old mother, Dale Girard, who in 2014 was found dead 9 months after wandering from the Wesley Residence Nursing Home in West Duluth, Minnesota. The nursing facility admitted they were negligent in allowing Dale Girard to leave their facility as they knew that she was a wandering risk and still neglected to seek precautionary measures, such as a wander guard. The lawsuit was set to be tried in front of a jury earlier this month, but the company settled in court, likely deciding that a jury would not look favorably on this case, and I think that they're absolutely right. The settlement was an undisclosed amount. I guess it was a confidential settlement. But what's the facts here? Let's see.
It's absolutely horrible. So she wanders away from the nursing home, and she was at a risk. And we've talked about the different risk assessments that nursing homes do. You know, if you're a fall risk, if you're a bed sore risk, another one is an elopement risk, right? She had dementia and aggressive behavioral problems. She was at risk for wandering. So much so that she was required to be accompanied both inside the facility and outside the facility, and wore a device called a wander guard. And it's just it's like an electronic bracelet that people have for home arrest, where it goes off if you go out of a certain area. If you go off of the front door, or if you go off somewhere like that, it's going to go off. So she disappears from this residence, and they don't find her for 9 months. Now, she didn't survive for 9 months. She probably died that night, because 9 months later, they found her mummified body stuck in a fence. So this woman, you know, she wandered out from the nursing home, and within, I am sure within 24 hours, if not even less than that, she was probably dead. She couldn't feed herself. She couldn't find water. This is
truly horrific.
Yeah. She got stuck in a fence and died.
So we're very happy to hear the family of the Girards, the Girard family.
And what they had done is, sorry, I forgot to point this out, is that they didn't put a wander guard alarm on every door. So she found the one door that didn't have it, slipped
awful,
out.
Awful.
Yeah.
So we're glad that the Girard family has received at least some sort of justice for this case, for the negligence of the nursing home. And I think that actually that does it in terms of topics for us to discuss today on the podcast. Just to let you know, in case you didn't already, the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is available for download on Stitcher or iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. We are also available to be watched. You can see us on the YouTube channel, or you can watch us at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.